Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Daniel Pipes. He is the storied historian, analyst, commentator, and president of the Middle East Forum, the author of more books than I can count, and the author as well of innumerable essays and journal pieces, all in all, a national treasure. And it's always a privilege to have him with us. Daniel Pipes, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Frank, and thanks for the exuberant introduction.
It is an exuberant but well-deserved introduction. Let me ask you, there's so much to talk about in your portfolio at the moment, but I'd like to pick up on something we were talking about earlier in the program with Christian Whiten, namely Samantha Power, the woman that President Obama has anointed to become the next U.N. ambassador of the United States, a woman who embraces a doctrine known as responsibility to protect. Is this a formula, the Samantha Power doctrine, for getting the United States engaged in Syria, among other places, and is that advisable, Daniel Pipes?
It certainly would be if she were an academic. But what one finds is that people who are writers and theorists, when they get into power, change. As the Washington aphorism goes, where you stand is where you sit. So I would be surprised if one found her arguing for the same things that she would be arguing for were she
out of office. Yeah, well, let's hope that's the case. Because I know you've staked out some somewhat controversial ground in certain quarters that we should be steering very clear of Syria, and have offered many very sensible reasons for doing so. There is a kind of, I like to call it Pipes doctrine now, that you initially articulated that at the time argued for actually helping Bashar Assad, lest he lose to the Sunni al-Qaeda's and others. That role now seems to be reversed. According to the Pipes doctrine, should we be aiding the rebels, as John McCain and Bret Stephens and others are suggesting?
Indeed. If it in fact is the case that Assad is winning, then we should prevent that from happening. I advocated supporting Assad at a point only 2 months ago when it seemed quite clear that he was losing. If he is in fact winning as a result of the victory in Qusair and other developments, then by all means, we should be preventing him from taking control over the country as he used to have it 2.5 years ago. Yeah, our interest, I believe, is in having these extremists fight each other. It is quite extraordinary to have Hezbollah off fighting the Qaeda-related terrorists.
Right, Sunnis and others.
This is, I don't know about you, but I rather like
it. It's as good a game as we can play. That's correct. You have, however, crossed swords a bit with Bret Stephens of the Wall Street Journal most recently, Daniel Pipes, over this question. He particularly hearkened back to an earlier sort of set to of this kind, Sunni versus Shia, in the Iran-Iraq War. I think you rather properly raise questions about the historical accuracy of his depiction of that war and how it sorted itself out. Give us a sense of that conflict and the lessons for today from it.
Well, he correctly pointed out that there were a whole range of reasons why that was unpleasant for us, including attack on our ship and so forth. But I would argue that, yes, there were painful parts of it, but looked at with a 25-year perspective, the war ended in 1988, we can see that it very much diminished the power and appeal of Ayatollah Khomeini's regime and revolution on the one hand, and permanently reduced the power of Saddam Hussein's regime as well. So it did turn out well for us in these two vicious regimes. Both were enfeebled by their 8-year-long war.
Yeah, it at least bought us some time, which we may not have used as effectively as we would have liked. Two other quick points, Dana, before we turn to Turkey, because I want to get your thoughts on that as well. One is, you mentioned the role of Hezbollah. It's now seemingly on the march outside of Lebanon. I'd like to get your sense of how serious a problem that is, not just obviously for Assad, but Assad's opponents, but for the rest of us. But also the fact that John McCain, one of the champions of aiding these so-called freedom fighters, couldn't seem to tell them apart from the terrorists when he was meeting with them, indeed met with several terrorists. And yet he would have us believe that we can figure out how to arm only the good guys and not have the bad guys get arms. What are your thoughts on those two points?
Well, on the latter point, I think your question is your answer. Yeah, if he couldn't tell the difference, it probably means others can't tell the difference either, and that we would likely be helping people who are vicious enemies of ourselves. And we can't hope that these are going to, that we can find the liberal voices in the anti-Assad rebel forces. I don't think that's possible.
Or at least restrict our aid
on
to
the
them.
Right. On the former point, this could conceivably be a turning point favorable to Hezbollah. I don't think so. I think the fact that it is getting so entwined in a civil war in Syria is likely to do it permanent damage in Lebanon and elsewhere. But if things came out very well for the regime and for Hezbollah, it could be a yet greater force. So my expectation is that this is bad for Hezbollah, but there's certainly a possibility that this will enhance Hezbollah's reputation and power.
And again, according to the Pipes Doctrine, a reason why we should be working to stop them, albeit in some way that tries to keep the hands, weapons out of the red guy's hands on the Sunni side as well. Let's talk a little bit, Daniel, about Turkey, because this is an area of the world, again, that you are deeply knowledgeable about. You've written recently a number of pieces about what has been happening of late in Turkey with demonstrations and violence used against the demonstrators by the Erdogan regime. What's happening there at the moment, and where do you think this is likely to lead?
Well, Erdogan left in the midst of all this for a four-day so-called goodwill tour to North Africa. He disdained this whole thing, the protests across the country, 60-plus cities. He's now returned, and the big question is, has he learned from this? Is he going to eat humble pie? Is he going to say he made a mistake? Is he going to apologize in some way? Or will he continue as he has been the past week and say, this is a bunch of bums and looters, extremists who don't count, and we're going to continue on as we have been? Should he do the latter, I think it'll be highly provocative, and there'll be far more of what we've seen. Should he do the former, then it could collapse. It really depends on one man and on his, you know, his personality. So far, there's every reason to think that he would continue just, you know, battering away, insulting them. But maybe this time it got to him. He realizes that he can't continue like this. And what's particularly interesting is that his own closest allies, the deputy prime minister, the president, the people he's worked with for years, are distancing themselves from him. If there's any analogy I can think of, it would be Margaret Thatcher, who was toppled by her own conservative party in Britain after, I think, 13 years in power, because they felt that she was so polarizing and alienating that they didn't want her to head the party anymore. So she was the dominant politician. There was no one remotely as, you know, impressive and important as she was, and Erdogan has that position today in Turkey. But nonetheless, they felt that they needed someone quieter, you know, less abrasive, less controversial, and they pushed her aside. It's conceivable that in the AKP there could be something similar to that.
Fascinating, and very much to be hoped for, it seems to me. Again, you never know quite what you'll get next, but certainly if Erdogan with his agenda were to be checked and supplanted, I think that's got to be a good thing for us. Daniel, I'm reminded of something you said, I think, when you were last with us, which I just would call to mind to all of our listeners. You considered this the most dangerous Islamist regime on the planet. Tell us why again, briefly.
Well, Iran is obviously, in the short term, the most dangerous, what with building nuclear weapons. But I see the Iranian problem as temporary, in the sense that this is a deeply unpopular regime that and draw the analogy to the Soviet Union in the 1970s. Bellicose, dangerous, but hollow and destined to fall. I think the Iranian regime is destined to collapse. It's a bad regime. Now, what Erdogan has done in Turkey is built something which is far more durable and far more influential, far more attractive. Granted, he has his foibles, and we're watching them now catch up with him, but the regime could be there for decades and decades.
And that makes
it
dangerous indeed. Indeed. Daniel, we have to let you go with that. Thank you very much. Dr. Daniel Pipes of the Middle East Forum, we appreciate your work so much and taking some time for us as well at this moment.